We are broadcasting live from across Greater Toronto right here on godfathersofpodcasting.com because we are the Godfathers of Podcasting, and you know that we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Thank you so much for joining us live tonight. If you're tuning in to the archive of this show on any major podcast provider, or you're right here on our website at a later date, we invite you to join us live the next time we go live. Just go to godfathersofpodcasting.com, check the calendar, and find out when that will be. Also, when you're on our website, make sure you check out our shop and all the new designs that were released last week. A bunch of people picked up new pieces of merchandise last week, t-shirts, tanks, crop hoodies, and they're giving us unbelievable reviews. The quality is great. The designs are awesome. The color selection is amazing. And now we have sizes that go up to Big Man 5XL. You can interact with us right now. Send us questions, comments, or just tell us which member of the team you think is ugliest. Send us a text, 437-375-2000. We're also now on WhatsApp. Some of you complained, I want a text, but I don't want them long distance. All right, WhatsApp it, 437-375-2000. No long distance charges. Fuck the man. 437-375-2000. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a man who would never do the milk crate challenge, and a man who would if you put enough money in an unmarked envelope. Notorious TID Chris Tidwell and your bro Danny O.
Yo, I don't know if I would do it, but I feel like I kind of want to try.
Oh, really? No.
I see man's
looking like pure idiots all over the but some people are doing these challenges for like $2,500. Now, would you try it for $2,500?
Me? No, yeah. I watch people die on that.
Yo,
like, murder. For anyone who doesn't, if you've been living under a rock this week and you don't know what we're talking about, let's take a quick look. It's been referred to as the Hood Olympics.
Yeah.
Here's a quick peek at
the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Here's a quick peek at the new viral sensation that is killing kids everywhere.
Did you get this from Snoop's channel? Snoop loves posting these.
Nah, this is straight off the YouTube. Death.
Where do they get all these milk crates from? How do they have so many?
Yeah.
Oh.
If you're listening to us and not watching, go to godfathersofpodcasting.com and
watch. Yeah. Why would you listen
to this? Like, there's a pyramid. What are you looking at? Like what? 2, 4, 6, 8.
There's at least 6 high, in the middle.
8 high in the middle. I think it's like 8 high. What do we got? 2, 4, 6, 7.
The 7 in the middle of that one. Right. There's a dude who did it, and he did it while rolling a spliff. Did you guys see that one?
Nah.
Yo, I just watched
the wipeouts.
Wow. There's another dude who did it, and I feel bad because I should have remembered his name. He's a very popular, like, TikTok. You know, right. Social media guy or whatever, and he did it, and he got to the top of it, and like, dude handed him a couple of like dumbbells.
Oh, wow.
Get a couple of curls, gave the dumbbells back, and walked the rest of the way down. Wow. So like, clearly it's a balanced core.
It's and doable. Like,
oh, it's doable. This 100%. Guy was That's rolling. The thing with these challenges. They're not like completely undoable,
right?
But they're just undoable enough to where like you can get all of that, like,
it's
like
showing some hilarious wipeouts, like, man.
3 weeks of Tosh.0.
Yeah,
all you need is one shitty crate. It has nothing to do at that point with your balance, right? Your athleticism, or your weight distribution. One shitty crate, and it's headas.
See, and here's the thing that I don't understand is like when I don't know what these guys are doing, because in my day when I was younger, that would have been considered like walking on your wall unit. Because that's what you used for it, right? And how do you get these milk crates nowadays?
They have so many. I don't know where they're getting them from.
Right?
I've never seen that many milk crates in my life, and I thought milk crates were kind of a thing of the past, but apparently they're just
like retired DJs, and they just went into their garage and found them, I guess.
Amazon's gonna sell like collapsible milk crates. You know what I mean? Like collapsible, so they go flat and you can put them all together and build these things. You watch.
My boy Jason made a comment to me earlier today. He's like, it's only Black people and Latinos that are doing this.
That's what it seems like.
What's going on, Black
people? Yo, dear Black people, I never really ran with that segment, but why? Why the milk crate challenge? I don't know. You're giving us laughs. I'll tell you that.
You just said you would do it.
No, I think that I would do it by way of saying, I think that I would take the challenge. I think you mentioned one of us would do it for an envelope of money. I think that was me that you're talking about, and I think I could do it. I think I can do it, but I'm not gonna join this challenge.
What was dude's name that said this, Donnie?
Jason?
I think Jason needs to check his algorithm on his phone because he just seems to be pulling up only those videos.
Those are the only ones I see. I saw them all on Snoop's.
Well,
Instagram,
we know what your algorithm is.
Another story that popped up everywhere within the last 23 hours as of our live broadcast time right now is last night early the new Spider-Man trailer dropped. It wasn't supposed to drop for yet another little while, but apparently there was a leak, so they said fuck it, we're gonna put it out ourselves. Here it is. The new Spider-Man movie No Way Home, which comes out around Christmas time this year. This trailer, shockingly for these superhero movies, shows way more than you expect to see in a trailer. Usually the trailers show like little tidbits and you don't really know what's going on.
Is it giving away the movie?
No, it's not giving away the movie, but it is confirming things that were rumored in terms of people that would appear.
Okay.
So, to wit, there has been a long-standing rumor for quite a while that this movie was going to deal with the extended storyline that's happened on WandaVision and the Loki show on Disney Plus, and is going to be happening in the new Doctor Strange movie in terms of there being a multiverse. And there's many different parallel universes happening simultaneously. And because of that, there have been stories for quite a while that characters from the original two Spider-Man films will be in this film.
When you say original two, are you talking about prior to Tom Holland Spider-Man?
Yes. You're talking about Willem Dafoe.
Tobey Maguire.
Really?
And Andrew Garfield, the two original cinematic Spider-Men, are expected to appear in this film as Spider-Man.
Wow.
Willem Dafoe, different Spider-Men from different dimensions. Not unlike the cartoon Spider-Verse that came out a couple years ago. Okay. Willem Dafoe, who portrayed the Green Goblin in the first Spider-Man motion picture, is expected to be in. You see glimpses of his character in this new trailer. The actor who played Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2 is in the trailer. There are hints of rising sand, so it's a hint at the Sandman's return.
Wow.
There is electricity coming from the sky, and Jamie Foxx has already revealed that he is returning to his role as the electric Electro. Black guy. I can't remember.
Electric Black Guy.
Yeah, that's his name. The world is going bananas for this trailer.
Yeah, yep, they are.
And then Tid sent a text earlier and said, this is stupid. What?
No, I did not.
What did
no,
you
I
say?
No, I did not.
What did
I
you say?
I said, new Spider-Man trailer, .. because I always put 4. Yuck.
Why
that's
yuck?
That's what I said.
Yeah, that's right. Why did you say that?
You know what? Listen, here's the thing.
I've
never been a huge fan. I think it's going to be very confusing for a lot of reasons. I think that they're trying to put too much into this. Because Spider-Man is, I mean, let's think about this for a second. He's a messy teenage kid who leaves webs all over the town everywhere he goes, doesn't clean up after himself. It's kind of rude, actually. Right. And now the thing is with this new one, from what I understand, is that everybody knows who he is now. Right. From the end of the last one.
Correct.
Right.
From the end of the movie, Far From Home, there was the big reveal that J. Jonah Jameson went on the big screen TV at Times Square and said, Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
Right. So apparently the way it goes is that he is getting a hold of Doctor Strange to create a spell to make everybody forget who he is.
Right.
And in doing so, it opens up the multiverse. Okay. And here we go. Crocodile Loki's coming everywhere. Like it's gonna get so silly.
To
why couldn't we just let him die in Endgame?
Oh man. Well, that's the thing. I thought that with the Avengers movies, it would get confusing because you're literally combining several different major characters in one story. And I thought it's going to be too much. And they did make it work. When it comes to this Marvel stuff, I give it chances because they really, the way they pulled off Avengers makes me think they can pull this off.
I'll tell you, that sounds crazy.
I wasn't expecting all of that multiverse stuff, those former Spider-Men. That's crazy.
Yeah, dude.
That brings it all home.
People
were
bananas when they saw
it. Well, no, what it does is it doesn't bring it home. It opens it up.
Sure.
It opens it all up for all the other ones. Because obviously that was the thing. You know, you're like, oh, they're dead, but they're not really dead. They're in this multiverse thing. And the Loki thing kind of teased at it. And now this is going to do it. All of the movies are going to happen. And it's gonna be like when there was that second kind of phase of these heroes and these characters in the comic books, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And now they're getting to it in the movie form.
There's a great moment in the new trailer playing off of what happened in the Infinity War film when Dr. Strange and Peter Parker first met.
Right.
And this part was actually in the trailer for the movie.
Oh yeah, and he gives him his name.
Where he says, he goes, hey, I'm Peter Parker. And he goes, I'm Dr. Strange. Oh, we're using pretend names. I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And
then
in this movie, you see him approach Dr. Strange and he goes, hey, Dr. Strange. He goes, Peter, we saved half the universe together. I think we can be a little less formal. And he goes, okay, Steven. And then he pauses and goes, that feels weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Real, I love that kind of writing.
The Marvel comedy is so specific and so nuanced.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, no, I do too. I was going to say too, what I like about the way they're doing this film is they're making sense of stuff that didn't make sense anymore. Because as fans, we have to give up that Tobey Maguire is not Spider-Man and the next dude is not Spider-Man. Like now we get to be okay with it again.
It all because
they've made
together.
Sense of it all. Yeah.
It all ties
like
together.
Batman is, they got to fix that.
It's very interesting the way that they do this. And for anyone out there who did not see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is a cartoon that was released 2 years ago. At first, I was like, it's a stupid cartoon. It is fantastic.
Oh, it's dope.
It's fantastic.
Is Miles Morales in this film?
Well, that's another rumor. There is a lady in the trailer who people are insinuating might be Miles Morales' mama.
I gotta check this trailer out.
Yeah. So it's a really cool thing. And it's gonna pick up on the theme of Into the Spider-Verse, the cartoon, as well as everything that's happening right now in Marvel, Loki, WandaVision, the new Doctor Strange film. That's all this multiverse stuff.
Right.
So yes, Tid's right. There's potential for it to be confusing, but I think they're going to figure it out. I wanted to touch on this. Tid introduced me to this guy. Tid introduced me to this musician. Apologies if I butcher this name. Leo Moraccioli. Does that sound about right? Moraccioli.
We're going to go with that.
So this guy, he is like the modern day Richard Cheese. And for those of you out there who don't know Richard Cheese, about 20 years ago, Richard Cheese was a guy who used to do lounge style music. Hey, how are you? Right? He would do lounge style covers of popular pop songs.
Okay.
And they were hysterical. This guy does heavy metal covers of everything.
Everything.
Let's take
like
a quick
peek. Absolutely everything.
Yeah, I need to check this.
Let's take a quick peek. Everyone watch this. Dan, I know you're seeing this for the first time.
Rock Leap Studios.
Headbanger. Listen and put me down. I'm the hottest round. I told your mother, you all can stop me now. Listen to me now. I'm lasting 20 rounds. And if you want me, then come on, get me now. It's you with me now. The biggie, biggie bounce. I know you think the way I switch my style. People sing around. Now people gather around. Now people jump around. Get your freak on. 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 Get your freak on.
get out of here. That's fantastic.
Is he doing all the music? He seemed to be on the drums and guitar. He does everything, eh?
Yeah, he's got it all set up there, and this dude is incredible. Now, the thing is he does have other musicians and stuff like that because he actually does live shows. They do live shows as well. Like,
and it's all covers?
It's incredible. Yeah, it's literally
Some of the other covers he does?
He does the cover for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? What is Love?
Oh, wow.
What is Love? Black Velvet. You know what I mean? A little bit of Canadiana there, I guess, right? The Bee Gees. Bee Gees, Night Fever. He does Africa.
You got to text me this dude's name because your pronunciation, I'm not sure how to spell it. I gotta look into this. That was pretty ill.
We'll link it there. You could go to YouTube and just type in Leo Metal Covers. Boom.
Yeah,
and you'll find his thing. It's called Frog Leap Studios.
Right.
This thing. Big shout out.
How'd you discover him? You know where he's from?
I found him like from a cover, a song that I had heard randomly, and now 40% of my entire playlist. At work, because it's just rad covers. It's not the original.
Good on him.
We just got a text at 437-375-2000 from Lisa. Says Leo's cover of Frozen is epic.
Frozen, like the movie Frozen,
like the Disney.
Oh, dude, movie. He does like Baby Shark.
But what song from really?
He does. He does. What the Fox Says.
I'm gonna guess.
I don't know, dude. And he's got a wife and a little kid. And sometimes they're in some of these videos. Like this guy's got his
good on him for knowing his music range.
Yeah, he has got his hustle on.
And by the way, let's not underplay the fact that having the musical ability to rearrange a popular song and make it your own and still make it recognizable enough that people feel it, that is not easy.
I still can't hear Get Your Freak On without thinking a 40-year-old virgin, though.
Fair.
Right. That scene from the car. It's too funny.
Totally fair. Yeah. We just got another text at 437-375-2000. Hey, shut the fuck up. Where's the guest? He's coming. You shut the fuck up.
Here's the thing. You don't have a microphone, so we don't care what he's saying.
Yeah.
He'll be on at 8:30, so sit back and enjoy the heavy metal covers, okay, Dick? Anyone else, if you want to text us? What's that number again, Dan?
I don't know. Wait till it comes on the screen.
This guy...
I literally got a text from somebody who goes, I can text you anytime. I memorized the number because Dan sings it enough.
437-375-2000. There you go.
All right. Another interesting story that came across the wire in the last few days. So the journey to replace the late Alex Trebek as the host of Jeopardy has been a very difficult one. There's been tons of guest hosts and different things. There's been rumors about who would take over. And then finally, the executive producer of Jeopardy, Mike Richards, said, fuck it, I'm the host. He gave himself the job.
Really?
He was officially the host for one day. He resigned last week.
How come?
After an expose by The Ringer stated evidence that Richards is an opportunist with a history of making sexist, classist, xenophobic remarks and detailing discrimination lawsuits during his time as a producer on The Price is Right. Mike Richards apparently said, this is too much. I'm out. So now the remaining producers on Jeopardy are left going, we have the most iconic game show in history.
Yeah. And
we cannot find a host.
Is it?
So to that, hold on. I'll get to you. Taking over the title on a temporary basis will be actress, author, and neuroscientist who starred on Blossom and The Big Bang Theory, Mayim Bialik.
Oh, wow.
She guest hosted the show back in June and was very well received. There was a lot of people that were disappointed when she didn't get the role. And Dan, I know you want to jump in, but let me share this with you because it may also add to what you want to say. Here's Mayim Bialik talking about the opportunity to host Jeopardy.
I can't imagine not wanting to do anything involved with Jeopardy. I offered to sweep the floors and they said, no, you can guest host. This is such an iconic and an unbelievable piece of our collective culture. To be considered to be part of it really in any way is just, it's an immense honor, especially for someone who's dedicated so much of my life to academia, to knowing things and to being able to communicate things. I think being a woman of science, as I am, is something that I'm obviously very passionate about presenting myself as. I really didn't grow up with a lot of female role models. And I think, especially for young people, not just young girls, but for young girls and boys, to see that women can be scientists and can do these types of intellectual things, that feels very important to me. And also, as a second-generation American whose grandparents, you know, on one side never fully mastered the English language, it's just an unbelievable opportunity to see what, in two generations, my family has been able to see.
Dan, your comments.
Well, I'd be happy for a female to take over that role, but just exactly how much has Blossom aged? What kind of jacket was she wearing?
I was going to say she could have probably covered up a little bit more. I mean, I feel like she might have been giving a little bit too much away, or she decided to dress like your weird aunt
who has way too many cats. Is talking and you're looking at her outfit.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying I
don't know where she got it.
No, the jacket looks like the upholstery of a 1970s station wagon. I just 100%. Wasn't sure what. No, listen, Maya Bialik, props to her. She has. I don't know how she delves between neuroscience and acting and is so accomplished at both. I do think what I was going to say, the point I was going to make earlier, is that Jeopardy is obviously a longstanding iconic game show. Alex Trebek was a longstanding iconic game show host. And I'm actually disappointed they didn't kind of have this, apparently, in mind a long time ago. They understood that there was a cancer diagnosis. You would figure the search for his replacement might even involve Trebek. And they threw so many people out there. I know Ken Jennings hosted for a minute. I was like, that might be cool because he's one of the greatest players ever. And I'm just surprised they went through this wheel of different people. I don't know why this dude, Mike Richards, who no one knows as an on-camera personality, would even think to take over that role. So it seems to me like they're making a mess of it. I don't know who the other candidates are, but she is obviously as good a candidate as you can get. So my vote's for her, but I'm disappointed that they couldn't. I mean, he's so iconic. This shouldn't be one of those things that everybody gets a shot at. You know what I'm saying? They needed a real replacement. They need to do it soon. Rest in peace, Alex Trebek. I wish they would get another Canadian to host, but he did us proud.
Maya Bialik went on to say in that interview,
one of my grandmother's favorite shows ever. Rest in peace to her too.
She went on to say that Alex actually guest starred on Blossom when she was a kid.
Is that right?
She didn't get to interact with him, so that was a bummer.
That's crazy.
Like Bob Barker was pretty, you know, prominent figure in the game show too, right? And we were able to, you know, move on and get a replacement in Drew Carey, and we've watched him grow, and now he's like big, weird beard. Mm-hmm. Drew Carey.
Oh, is it?
You know, it's Beard Carey, or it's Drew Harry.
Nice.
Is what he is now.
Drew Harry.
But see, that's what they did with Price is Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
went to a guy.
And that's cool. Like, I couldn't tell you three things about neuroscience,
right?
Let alone anything inside of it. So she's already like a way more rounded human being than I am. Yeah. So like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's not like Alex Trebek was the biggest, happiest personality when it came to like game shows, but that wasn't the show. You needed somebody who had the ability to drive that show, those questions, and deal with those people, those nerd people that came on the show and answered all the questions, right?
There was something
be perfect. 100%.
There was something about Alex Trebek, although there was never evidence of this, but there was something about the way he carried himself that always made you believe he knew all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's the cards in front of him.
And you touche. And you fully believe Maya Bialik knows all the answers. Her IQ is more than all three of us combined.
Yeah, no question. But at the end of the day, you want a personality that you can endear, your audience can be endeared to. Same with the contestants. Anything I've ever seen her do shows that she's as pleasant as she is knowledgeable. So, you know, especially in today's day and age, getting a female to host that show would be the right
absolutely
move.
I'm in. Why not?
We just got another text in at 437-375-2000 from an anonymous texter. It says, guys, rest in peace, Charlie Watts. What are your thoughts? thoughts on Watts.
Dan, you want to take the lead on this one?
I'm Googling Charlie Watts right now.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Dan, do you want to take the lead? This reminds me of when I was at a mall and I met this girl that I had known and I went to school with. We're talking and the person I was with, like, what's her name? And I stood there. I'm like,
and she went, Charlie Watts.
What? I don't know. And don't throw to me.
That's why he threw to you.
Yeah, 100%.
Tid and I actually had an offer. Tid and I had an off-air wager on whether or not you'd know who Charlie
Watts. Oh, really?
Wow. Wow.
Tid, thoughts on Watts?
Here's the thing. Like, Charlie Watts, obviously 80 years old, I think it was. Yeah. Like,
he's 80.
Amazing career. He's the to go. You know what I mean? As far and who's next, right? This is where it's going to start to get tricky. There's no more steel wheelchair tour, you know? And Charlie Watts was a dude who he's seen it all. Like, that dude had stories because he's the dude that got to sit back, the drummer, sit back behind all of it and look at it from behind everybody. It's an amazing view. And for a dude like that to be able to do it for that many years, incredible. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? Rest in peace to Charlie Watts, man. Now you're up there with all those other great drummers, those rock drummers, you know what I mean? Of back in the day, the John Bonhams of the world, you know, it's a cool place to be, man. Enjoy it.
Tid, I'm assuming that in your lifetime, you've seen the Stones perform live. Yes.
Yes, I have, with Living Color. Oh, Toronto, really? Actually.
Wow. That was at the CNE, right?
CNE. Yeah.
I was at that show. We weren't together though.
No, we were not fucking at that point.
No,
that was later.
Yeah. That.
If you had to say an iconic Charlie Watts Rolling Stones song where you listen to him beat the shit out of the drums and you go, that's why he was special. What's the first one or two songs that come to your mind?
None of them. No, and I'm being perfectly honest, because the only reason that I was at that show was because of Living Color. I had tickets to that show, and that's why I went to the show. I have never been a huge Rolling Stones fan. I understand them. I appreciate them. You know what I mean? And I can tell you what their songs are, obviously, right? And I appreciate their musicianship. Could I sit there and name songs from the Rolling Stones? No, probably not.
Two always stand out to me, and one is the obvious one that everyone thinks of is Satisfaction.
Sure.
The drums in Satisfaction are great. And then the other one is Honky Tonk Women. Yeah. Every time I hear the drums in Honky Tonk Women, I think, holy shit, this guy has a different level of special talent. Rest in peace, Charlie Watts.
I think the more important story is, I don't know if you noticed, Dan, or not, like the way that I filled time there without actually knowing a Rolling Stones song was able to like do it without just looking like a schmo on my phone going, I don't know how to get my screen unlocked.
Well, I'll say this much, man. And I actually mentioned the Stones, I believe, on this very show, because the one thing, while like you, I'm not a fan. I didn't listen to their music, but I'm very well aware of Mick Jagger and crew.
Of course.
Because when we had the Whispers on the show, and I talk about how much I love that group and how they've been around since the 60s, I listed the Rolling Stones as one of the few bands that I could even think of on par with the Whispers in terms of longevity. I don't care what type of music you make. I don't care what you're a fan of and what you're not. Yep. You must. Capital MUST must respect artists who've been around for that long, doing their thing, touring the world and making their fans happy. Generations upon generations of new people, artists coming and going, and people like the Stones continued literally up until they physically can't. So much respect to him and the group and any other artist who's in it to win it for life like they are.
Text message 100%. Just came in at 437-375-2000. It's from Kale in Cabbage Town. I love that.
That's not a real name.
Kale in Cabbage Town says,
guys, is he a vegetarian?
I got tickets to see Trix on September 7th in Toronto, hoping I get to meet you all there.
Oh, cool.
Will you buy merchandise from us?
Yeah, we got to tell Trix we're going to set up a gimmick table.
No, it'll be just outside out of the trunk.
Out of Dan's trunk.
Well, speaking of Dan's trunk, let me just say, because I didn't get a chance to say this on last week's show, but it's really important that I say it right now. Speaking of all this merchandise, I'm excited to announce that my debut single, Dear Hip Hop, which will celebrate its 25th anniversary in November, is finally available as a 7-inch vinyl single. So go to danio.com, spelt the way you see it on the screen, dan-e-o.com, and you can buy it now. Dear Hip Hop on 7-inch vinyl. The 25th anniversary is this November, and we'll be shipping them out then. So pre-order it now. They're on sale and selling fast.
Speaking of 7-inch,
is it Sunshine Johnny? Vinyl?
Oh. It's not Sunshine vinyl.
Oh, sorry.
Speaking of 7-inch, but those are still available too.
You want me to come over later?
No, no. I thought you were going to introduce the guest.
Oh, I can do that. Yes.
Ooh.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now to welcome our featured guest. And this man is a longtime friend of the show. This man used to join us on our old podcast many, many times, and he was even one of our featured bloggers. Tonight, however, we're hoping you get a chance to see a different side of him. This is a man who's truly living his dream. He's a professional wrestler with more than 20 years of experience who has taken that extreme passion and work ethic into a career as a motivational speaker. His platform as a television star on a wrestling show has allowed him to reach more people and positively affect the lives of kids everywhere. The pandemic forced him to restructure and retool his school visits and create a thriving virtual business where he's able to spread his message. Just Giver. In addition to all of that, he's a proud husband, a father, and a prolific philanthropist who has worked to raise nearly $20,000 for various Canadian charities. You can watch him every Thursday night on Impact Wrestling, 8 p.m. Their new day and time, 8 p.m. on Access TV. Ladies and gentlemen, weighing in at 220 pounds, hailing from wherever his trailer takes him, representing Violent by Design, Love Is Like a Bomb, baby, come on, get it on. Living like a lover with a radar phone. Looking like a tramp, like a video vamp. Demolition wrestler, can you be our man, Cody Deaner?
Wow. I was about to say, after Christopher dropped the 7-inch joke, I was about to say, this is the worst introduction I've ever had joining the podcast. And you totally just flipped
that. Totally redeemed yourself.
And you redeemed it. That is hands down the best introduction that I've ever been given for a podcast.
That's what he's good for.
So thank you, brother. I'm excited.
Donnie has always been good for an intro. Like the finish.
That's it. I'm done.
The finish, not so much. No. You get your heart, but that's it.
It's good to see you guys.
Deaner, it has been too long, man.
It's just so good to see you guys, man, and to be with you guys here tonight. Genuinely, this is fun. I'm glad I could do this. Just not even to get out any of the... You did just a really good job of selling me to some people there, Donnie. Not even for me selling anything. It's just good to just see you guys and know I'm going to get to chat with you guys, catch up with you guys. I'm looking forward to it.
It's been a minute.
It's honestly a pleasure. And just to give everyone some context, I mean, I remember... because there's some of you out there that are not even aware of this. I actually had a former guest on this show that was talking to me about this last week. Had no idea that Tid, myself, or even Dan have ever been involved in the wrestling business. But was a guest on this show and just, you know, talked about other shit. Yeah, they had no idea about our background.
Yeah.
But it's been a really fun ride because I remember Cody when he first broke in. And he was wrestling under the name Cody Steele. And at that point, Tid had already been wrestling for a few years. He and I had been doing stuff on the radio. We'd been doing stuff together. Cody came in, made a splash in the HWF. I believe that's where you started.
It is. It was my first show was ever on the HWF. I could tell you an interesting story about that. But
was Tid booking? Was Tid booking?
No, it was a random weird guy. I even forget his name, but he was actually some kid, some Mark from my high school. So this is late HWF Tid. You might know.
Yeah.
I think his name might have been Ralph or something. He was like this, but he was.
So this was after the fall of Mark Anderson.
Correct.
Had sold and had a nervous breakdown. I have no idea who that was due to.
Mark Anderson, one of the shadiest wrestling promoters ever.
So
advertised Bill Cosby.
And then I think a bunch of us had gone on tour out east, and that's when some of you guys were still running here under this guy, and that's when you came in there while we were in. Yeah,
because when I just before I got in the business, I was a mark that when it went to the HWF shows in London and watched. I actually brought a guitar for Tid to use in a fans use bring the weapons match.
Wow.
I brought that.
Did Tid use it?
Nice.
No, because I was oblivious, but like the guitar was already part broken. So like we gave it to him. They're like, what are you supposed to do? I'm like, hit him with it, man. But it's like it was already like smashed in the back because
right.
I had hit my brother with it or something. Like, oh, you're so sweet. So they were nice and was like, okay, yeah, kid, we'll use it. So then the Mark and me were like, wait, when's he gonna use the guitar? And they never did, but of looking back on it, of course you didn't use the already broken guitar in your stupid hardcore match, but whatever.
So stupid.
Cody, yeah.
I was just going to say, so that was when you first broke in, and then five or 6 years later, Dan and I founded another podcast where we were hosting a wrestling show, and that was around the time when you transitioned. You went from Cody Steele to Cody Diener, mm-hmm. completely transformed your career. That's when Dan and I started spending a lot more time around you. You were involved with us with our website and everything else.
Yeah.
I've always been curious to know, like, I understand why you made the character change from Cody Steele to Cody Diener.
Yes.
Where did the name come from, Diener? Mm. Like, what inspired that piece of creativity?
Yeah. So I knew that I needed to like pull some ideas from like different. I wanted to look outside the wrestling bubble mm-hmm. for character ideas. So just a second, guys. This is part of my life right now. I have
daddy duty.
I have a three-year-old daughter trying to come into my office right now. Just
beautiful.
A second.
Well, do your thing, man.
Well, one of the major reasons why the Godfathers of podcasting goes Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's because we're working that out too. Parenting, man.
I have to go top job, Mrs. Diener, for a second because she isn't She's not upholding her end of the bargain right now. Just as
he's gonna go tell her to give her.
Dude, I'm gonna laugh so hard if he walks in and all you hear through the speakers, you want me to warm up the band?
All right, now I will answer. I'll answer your question with screaming 3-year-old in the other room.
It's all good. That's the top job, bro.
Yeah, like
and we're live. This is what happens.
Kind of started to pull. I pulled from some different like movies, characters, child. Like a lot of the inspiration for the Switch was actually people that I grew up with, because I grew up in a small town in the middle of nowhere, Port Bruce, Ontario, and like the town I grew up in, there's actually there's 5 different trailer parks. So 200 people live in my hometown year round, but in the summer there's like the population goes to like 2,000 because everybody comes and stays in their trailer.
Oh, you're a mended wrestler.
Did it ever get hit by a tornado?
It did not. It did not. Uh-huh. No tornadoes. No. So I was watching. So I started to like pull from different movies that I was seeing. One was like Joe Dirt was the Southern influence, but the Canadian influence was a movie called FUBAR.
Good movie.
And I watched that and I'm like, and Joe Dirt and like all these movies were like some of the like side cast characters were like these crazy Uncle Rednecks. Like, what's the other one? Like Napoleon Dynamite, the uncle on there. And
for sure.
And I'm like, I'm seeing them and I'm like, every town has that guy. And has that guy that like sits on the curb at 7-Eleven and drinks their slushy, but like then like fills it with liquor and like hangs out with the high school kids and is a total loser. Like those are the people in the movie. Those are the people I grew up with. Like there's an interesting character here that like is ready made for professional wrestling. I just have to kind of find it. So that was kind of that was the inspiration for the character change for sure. Was a lot of these things that I was pulling from, and so it had a lot of different reincarnations.
It's been a process over many, many years, right?
Absolutely.
But like as I kind of refer to it as like Cody has traditionally been like he's like the honky tonk man of indie wrestling, or even the Jim Duggan of independent wrestling. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. What I mean is like Cody is really, really good for years and years and years at being a babyface. He found a way to get in touch and look at these kids and look at these people in the eye inside of the crowd. And this is one thing that I've said vocally for years. It's no secret. If you're new listening to the show, obviously Cody and I go back for many, many years. We've faced each other. Jesus Christ Almighty. I couldn't even tell you how many times inside of the ring. You know what I mean? Like, I have a lot of respect for what he does inside of the business. And he always had a way as a baby face guy to be able to look at these families, look at these kids, more importantly, look at these kids and be able to draw out whatever it took to make these kids happy. That's what I mean by the Jim Duggan, you know what I mean, so to speak, of independent wrestling. Is this is a thing that Cody was able to do. I want to ask you how hard, because we've had these talks and I want to hear it from you. How hard was that discussion to be able to say, I need to reinvent all of this and I need to turn it in a different direction and become what you're doing now in professional wrestling? Because it impacts a lot more than just your character.
Right? Yes.
But you went from a guy who is known for being able to have very technical, very precise ring work and great matches, and you'd be evaluated on the strength of your match, to being a guy that would say to my face, it's all smoke and mirrors, baby. It's all character.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You completely transform.
That's
a great question. Go ahead.
So I'll start with that one there from there, Donnie. Like, what I'm kind of doing now is a mixture of both.
For sure.
Now my new character is like, I'm pulling in work, like wrestling that I've always been able to do, but never really made it the focus of what I was doing for so many years. Cause I was really honing in on some of the other stuff that, Tid was just talking about. But it's also really important to have the character stuff because I'm on a television show where I'm part of a group that is very character driven. So I'm taking all the years of experience and molding it into one. But what you're saying, Tid, is so true in that it was, for me to say that, oh, it was an easy decision to make, I'd be lying to you. It's difficult on a lot of different levels. So level one is, I always found it funny earlier in my career when I heard like Hulk Hogan doing interviews and saying like, I'll never be a heel. I can't be a heel. Cause I would disappoint all those kids. You know, all those kids. And I was like, what a mark. Like, come on, it's wrestling. Like, just be a heel and go sell your t-shirts. Like, who cares? And then when it came time for me to make this decision of being a heel and knowing that there's some of those, like, some of these kids that I've done charity work with and raised money with them. And like, there's these young kids that believe in wrestling is real. And then all of a sudden they're going to see their hero on television doing really mean, dastardly things that affected my decision. Like those things that went through my mind. So that was one thing that went through my mind. Two, I've had people ask me this before, like they have said almost what you're saying there, Chris, is like, you're the Hacksaw Jim Duggan of wrestling. You have your thing. You found your thing. And you're in your lane and you've got your lane. Why are you getting out of your lane? Like you're so successful in that lane and you're so known for that lane. Why are you getting out of it? And is that scary? The answer is yes, it's scary. Now, this is a long way of coming around. The third thing is another thing you said, Chris, you said you respected the way I do business. This is what it comes down to. Is also the business of it, which has made it easy and hard. Hard in the sense that, like, okay, I've got Chris has seen it. I I sell merch out the freaking wazoo when I'm at a show. Yeah. Because the
he's
kids
one of the
up.
Only guys that sells more merch than me. Let's
be like honest. I've made a very good I made a very good living yeah. selling merchandise based on the role I was playing.
Right. He's and the Gene Simmons of indie wrestling.
So actually when my name was brought up in creative discussions about maybe being a part of a potential group, it was actually pushed away from the management at Impact and my friend Eric Young. They all said, Cody will never do this. He's too established. Let's not even bother even bringing his name to it because there's no way he would do this. Okay. So then when that was presented to me, that wasn't even presented to me. I was just told, like, hey, your name came up in some creative ideas about maybe you being in this group. We don't even have a group, but we're thinking about it. And your name came up, but we're like, you would never do it. So we just, because you're so established. And my first reaction, I told him, like, yeah, you're right. Like, I never would do that. Like, I'm in my line on what I'm doing. And then when I started to think about it more, I'm like, wait a minute. This is an opportunity. I got to think harder about this. Like, I was becoming complacent. And that's a really bad place to be in the wrestling business, is to be complacent. I was comfortable. So that you want to get comfortable, because once you feel comfortable in your role, then you found the sweet spot where I know when I come through that curtain, I know who I am. I'm comfortable with this. I know exactly how my character reacts in every situation. So I was comfortable, but I was complacent. And I was making decent money, but I wasn't making big money. And I've been at this for 20 years. And I'm like, if I want to get to the next level, I've got to bet on myself. I've got to also decide, like, hey, am I going to evolve? Because if you're not growing and evolving and moving forward and onward and upward, then you're standing still.
Yeah.
And
yesterday's news.
Yeah. So I was presented this opportunity in a very unique time in the business where there's no other indie shows going on right now anyways. Right. So all you have is a character on TV. You're not at a merch table selling merch.
Mm-hmm.
Now's the best time to try it. And so those are just some of the many different things I was thinking about. It was a long way of answering your question, but those are a lot of different things I was thinking about.
Diener, there's a couple questions that have come in on our texting hotline, 437-375-2000. I'm just going to go rapid fire through these because some of these don't really have anything for you to – to really respond to, but one is from Justin Gilmet, who says, Cody, just want to say thank you for being an awesome dude. Another one here, unnamed text, says, I see a lot of similarities between Cody Diener and Eric Young. Both were character-driven guys in TNA who now have the chance to really put on awesome matches. I'm a huge fan. Thanks for coming on the show. I have another message here that says, does Cody Diener like Letterkenny? I see a lot of similarities between him and his former character. I know Diener doesn't watch a lot of TV. And then there's another text here that says, and again, unnamed, sign your names, jerk offs. This one says, hey, Donnie, any funny stories from when you were booking about Cody Diener? I don't really have any funny stories about Diener other than
they're available on Venmo for $7.99.
The closest I have to that is I used to book a lot of wrestling shows, and a lot of times the promoters, the money guys of those shows would come to me with their ideas, and I would have to like temper expectations. And I one time had a promoter who came to me. And Diener, you don't even know this story, but he came to me and said, I want to book the Necro Butcher, who is a well-known hardcore wrestler, against Cody Diener in a ladder match.
Oh, jeez.
I was like, it's the beyond
screams
I've ever
money.
Heard. I ended up getting into
screams.
I
money,
ended up shit. Getting into the longest, most annoying argument with this guy about this suggestion because it didn't make sense.
No.
I'm like, a ladder match. People expect to see you fall off the ladder 50 times. Cody's not bumping for us.
You know? It's funny because I actually wanted to ask you a question, Cody, if you can sort of jog my memory a little bit, because I saw your reaction towards the whole hardcore match thing.
Yeah.
The question starts this way. Do you think that there's things that wrestling has done to sort of evolve? You're talking about evolution of your character. Yeah. Has wrestling in and of itself evolved in ways that you think there's just certain things that don't belong anymore, i.e. the hardcore match. And one thing that I wanted to ask you about in terms of jogging my memory is I recall a show in Oshawa. I can't remember if I was managing you, but I remember we went out of the building. Do you guys remember it? You know what I'm talking about? There's
the
that
one
that
where it was Legion, me and Hayden Avery on a car.
Hayden Avery, yes, that's the one.
2006.
I just wrestled in Oshawa for the first time in the post pandemic this past weekend.
Okay.
And I had two or three people come up to me and, do you remember that time you went out in the parking lot? Like,
yeah,
that is a very vivid memory in many people's minds. They're still going to shows in Oshawa simply because of that match.
Wow.
Yeah, man. So
how do you recall it in your personal history of your career? Where does it sit for you?
So
and those kinds of matches, because that's where my question was.
Yeah.
Well, what you just said illustrates it was a good piece of business.
Exactly. So there is a role for every different type of wrestling and every different kind of spice and like to me. I think I've heard Eric Bischoff talk about it this way, and he talks about he likes to see wrestling as like a buffet. Like there's something for everyone, and it should be a buffet. I'm not against hardcore matches.
Okay.
I'm not against comedy matches. I'm not against intergender matches. I'm not against like any kind of wrestling match. If it's done in the correct way,
okay,
and it's the correct piece of business, then it 1,000% makes sense and can be done correctly. If you came to me and said, we want to have you wrestle Necro Butcher in a ladder match.
And you've never touched each other.
What's the story?
Then I'm not against it because it's Necro Butcher, and I'm not against it because it's a ladder match. I'm against it because it doesn't make any freaking sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you give me the reason why we're doing that and we're going to build to it, and then we're going to make, I'm going to make more money off it, and you're going to draw more people into it, then I'm going to do it. I've had some crazy freaking matches, man. I had some matches with Jake O'Reilly where we busted a car. We were bleeding all over each other.
Yeah.
We were destroying. The cops were called and came to the show because they thought there was actually two men violently hurting each other.
Yeah.
That was all done by design. We did it on purpose. And guess what? When we started the angle, there was 200 people in the building. When we ended the angle, we did it in the fairgrounds in front of 1,000 people.
Right. Right. That's what I remember about.
It was good business.
It was violent by design.
Exactly. So that if it means good business and can be done properly, then you do it. I remember even more recently with the fine looking gentleman on my screen right now, Christopher Tidwell. We had a hardcore match in Sudbury, you know, just a couple years ago. And it was put on the card as a drawing attraction. Let's have this moment to give to the people as a moment to remember. But I knew this can be done in a good way where we're not going to kill the town. We're going to give them exactly what we want. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me and Christopher could do this match again tomorrow in our sleep. Yeah. And people are going to think that they saw this crazy, wild, insane thing. But we can do this in a smart way where we both come out of this like daisies, and we're still going to give them the smoke and mirrors and illusion of insanity.
The artwork has always been being able to give them what they want at our demands.
Yes.
That's really what professional wrestling is.
If there's one thing I can say,
I'm not even going to tell you what that money Mark wanted to pay you for that ladder match with Necro Butcher.
Okay, please don't.
You would have hung up on me.
The one thing that I do think is, if we're not careful in the business, is we're flipping the switch. The switch I'm talking about is the art of professional wrestling is going in there and making the people think that you're really hurting each other, but you're not. Mm-hmm. And what's happening now is guys are going out there and they are hurting themselves for real. But people think it's fake and it's BS. Mm,
that's crazy. You're right.
Like they're smashing each other and they're coming out really hurt.
Right.
And people don't respect it and care because like it's all fake, phony wrestling anyways.
Right.
So who's the mark in that situation?
Well, when you see that,
the wrestler's the mark for doing it. If that's what they're making up.
When you see that Nick Cage stuff that happens down in the States, right? Those death matches, like that is like to me, that I have no time for that.
Well, see, that's what I was talking about earlier with respect to the evolution of wrestling and if there's parts of it unnecessary. I think obviously hurting someone is unnecessary, and I think it always has been. But I was just wondering. I do want to ask you this real quick because I know this is important to you. And in terms of your evolution as a person, I can relate because for the past 15 years, I've been working with youth in sort of in a musical capacity. So I definitely want to hear more and ask you to give our audience more about what it is you are doing with the youth, because this is the real life stuff. This isn't character. This is really you. And I'd love to hear more about what you're doing.
Yeah. So before I go on that, I want to go back to the listener that said that they made a comment about myself and Eric Young.
Yeah.
And they saw similarities. That was actually part of the pitch that I presented, because after my name got dropped, I put my name back in the hat and I said, actually, I am willing to do this and I want to do this. And here's how we should do it. And here's why it makes sense for it to be me. And part of that pitch was exactly what that fan just said. Myself and Eric Young, our career is linear. We're friends, like good friends for 20 years. However, I can see myself, my career is the same as his, because I can understand where he's gone, and we can use that history of our characters and our friendship within the storyline, because the best storylines have an element of reality in them. So that comment from the fan, we've used within the story that we're telling on TV, because it's good business, going back to what we're talking about.
Last year on this show, we interviewed Eric Young, and we talked, and it was just shortly after he re-debuted with Impact Wrestling, and we talked about the very fact that we used to talk about with him 10 years earlier, which is he had been on TV for 10, 15, 20 years, and yet no one really knew how good he was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now he gets a chance to really show off how good he is. And so do you, in terms of your technical prowess and everything else. And then the comedy and all that, you've done it. Now it's time for some character driven stuff. Dan, I know you had your question about what he's doing these days. Cody, I'll let you answer that.
Yeah. So, it goes back to what Chris was saying earlier. He said, you know, being able to look out at the audience and look at the people in the eye and like make that connection. I consciously do that. That's not done by mistake. Like that is and you know that, but I'm letting your listeners know, like that is what our business is all about, is like drawing the people into what you're doing and making them feel something. And for me, like, I never want to forget why I love wrestling and when I first fell in love with this business, and it was when I was 5 years old. So I approach wrestling with that in mind, with the five-year-old in mind, the five-year-old me in mind. Like, that is what we're doing. That's what we're putting out to the world. So I love looking out at the fans when we do these shows and seeing families out there. Like, it's so awesome. I just love it. I love it. So when I'm at my merchandise table, that's the other unique thing about the independent wrestling is I'm not behind a curtain the whole time and only interacting with them when I'm in the ring. I'm interacting with them at the merchandise table, right? I'm talking to them. Yeah. So I'm actually like forming like relationships with these parents of these kids and getting to know these kids. I know these kids by name when I go to the show, the town the next time. So what happened was I was asked to be a guest of honor at a banquet for the Special Olympics. And it was one of the most humbling experiences of my life. Like, there was this panel of people that they brought in as guests. Like, they had a wrestler already. They had Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, like one of my heroes. They had Roberto Alomar. They had like all these famous like NHL guys. And then they had Cody Deaner. I'm like, oh my God, like I do not fit in here. But then this artist made all these like caricatures of all these people that were there. So like he had like this beautiful Ricky Steamboat thing, this beautiful Roberto Alomar. And then there's me. And I'm on this table of all these artist caricatures, and I'm like, this is like blowing my mind right now. I don't understand why I'm in this group of people, but like the Special Olympians specifically requested that I be there. Like I was a requested person, so I got to sit at a table with the MVP and a couple other people that won these awards for the Special Olympics banquet. It was very touching. And I just had this, I had the artist give me a copy of the, of this picture. He's like, I made a couple prints, give them away to some of the kids at your shows. Cause I know you do these events. So if you see any kids that you think might like this picture, give them away. And then I just had this, this epiphany. I'm like, I can do more than just give away five pictures for free. Mm. Like, I feel like this, these special, there were, I was sitting at the table with these Special Olympians that were powerlifters. They had this powerlifting team and they're working out in this dingy garage with their coach. And I'm like, you know what? I have an opportunity here. I said, I recognize I'm in a position of influence when I do these shows. I said, can I make copies of this picture and I'll sell them at my merchandise table and I won't keep any of the money. It'll be a charity item I have and I'll collect all the money and then I'll donate it and I'll give it to the Special Olympians. He's like, that's an awesome idea if you think people will buy it. Right. So I did it for like a month just to see, and I was able to raise $300 and within a month. And I went to the Special Olympic powerlifting team's practice. I handed them the cash. I'm like, this is donated from the, from, you know, the wrestling fans that I've met, and like the smiles on their faces. Yeah. I worked out with them. We did like a little a session, and I'm like, okay, I want to do more of this. Like, this is what, this is what it's all about. Like, I want to do more of this. As I met all these fans, I was meeting some very unique fans that had some special circumstances that, that just so happened they were working with some charities. I have a young fan of mine that goes to a deaf camp every summer. Another young girl fan of mine that she went to this, the Lansdowne Children's Center, because she's autistic. I have crazy stories that are connected to this, but maybe we don't have time to go into these stories. But like, anyways, I was finding these moments that I realized in the moment when I met these kids, I'm like, this is special. I need to do something with, I have to take advantage of this opportunity. So I started to partner with my wrestling fans. So all the charity work I do, it's not me alone, just yay, this is me doing this thing. Like, I'm doing it alongside a young wrestling fan, and we're partnering together, and we're raising money for like children's charities all across Canada. I'm doing it with young wrestling fans that I've met it along my journey. So
it's really great, man.
And I'm inspired every time I do it, and knowing that I'm also like inspiring these young kids, and they're realizing, oh man, I can do this. I can help other people and like raise awareness and help my friends and do this. It's really, really awesome. So
congrats, man.
That's why
that's sensational,
I do it.
Dude.
The fact that that's really great, you're being humble, saying you're not the one doing it, you're just partnering, but you are the face of the operation. You're the face of the operation. Your level of celebrity helps get it over, and you have done a yeoman's work, and we're so proud of you as your
100%. Very cool.
And guys, I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
Diener, we're right up against the clock, but okay. we have a text here. And I have to ask you this question because it's actually come in from about seven different people. This one is from I Blue Cornet. It says, Cody, did you see the biggest story in pro wrestling this year? Your thoughts on CM Punk coming back to wrestling?
Yeah, I saw it. I think any moment that can make people feel a genuine emotion, and whatever that emotion is, if you can get people to feel a real visceral reaction that even causes a grown man to cry and put his hand out and like bawl his eyes out, you are onto something.
And I got to tell you, the wrestlers out there on Twitter who shit on that fan who was caught on camera crying, they should all be embarrassed for shitting on that fan. That's what the industry is about, is creating emotion.
Totally.
And kudos to your colleague, Tommy Dreamer,
who said, saw that. Yeah.
We're going to find that fan.
Yeah.
We're going to buy him some gifts. We're going to get him plane tickets and tickets to go to Bound for Glory. That is absolutely amazing. That's the right thing to do. Tommy Dreamer gets it. He always has.
Totally.
And I think that's an amazing gesture.
It's what you want from your fans. Yeah. You want them to care that much.
Yeah. I think it's a very cool thing, you know, and certainly a guy like CM Punk, he put up the smokescreen for a long time that he was never coming back. So right. For all of his fans, that was a huge moment.
Yeah.
Maybe not the extent that some people are making it, the biggest ovation of all time, but it was very, very, very good.
Yes.
And it was a lot of fun. And there's nothing that you can say to take away from that moment.
For sure.
Diener. The last thing I want to say before we say goodnight is this. About 13, 14, 15 years ago, however long ago it was, when the three of us were hosting our old podcast and we had our old website and you were contributing to that site with the written word, you wrote an article, and it's like of the hundreds of articles that were posted on that site, it's the only one I ever remember, including my own. And it has stayed with me forever. And I think about it all the time, not just in the context of professional wrestling, but in the way I look at broadcasters and entertainers and athletes and everything else. And it was where you talked about people that have the it factor. It was the single most poignant article we ever published on that site. It changed the way I evaluated talent forever. You put into words things that everyone thinks, but no one knows how to verbalize. You talked about guys who have the it factor, that intangible something that you just know makes them special. This past weekend, I watched Hunter Hearst Helmsley run the first identification camp that they've had in 2 years. And he talked about that they're no longer pulling talent from the indies. They're looking outside of pro wrestling for actors, bodybuilders, comedians, people with the it factor. That's what they want. And the wrestling stuff, they'll figure it out. I think that that's just, it was a great piece of writing that you did. It has stuck with me forever. I think about it all the time working on this show with every guest that comes through. And I wanted you to know.
Always thinking about you.
I still remember it myself now. And I remember the three guys that I discussed in that article. There was James Storm, who I think has the it factor. Eric Young.
Yeah.
One of the guys. And the third one was Bobby Roode.
That's right.
Who went on a couple years later and actually called himself the It Factor.
yeah. What a piece of shit.
Yeah. But on tights. So I don't know. Maybe he was reading, maybe not. I don't know. But yes, I remember that. And I still think that is so important. And I think it's missing from a lot of people. And it's like this intangible thing that people are like, I don't know. Like, I think it's one reason why we've lost some fans in wrestling is that we get so into this bubble of, oh, the wrestling fans will like this guy. The wrestling fans will like this guy. Well, yes, the niche market of the wrestling fan will like this guy, but do they actually have the it factor that is going to speak to more people than just the people within the bubble?
100%. This guy will give you a 5-star match. He'll give you a 5-star match, but he doesn't connect with anyone.
Yeah.
100.
Right.
Cody, we got to book the rematch. This is how you do it, right? Let me show you guys. Okay. We're up against the wall. You're out of time. You're getting yelled at by the booker in the back. You should go through the curtain. You've gone over. Go fuck yourself. We're going to book the rematch, though. I'll see you very soon. Has some dates coming up that we're going to cross over 100%. I can't look forward to it, brother. Thank you so much.
Hey. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Diener. And hey, inside baseball for everyone out there, Cody Diener, the only man on planet Earth that refers to Tid as Christopher.
And vice versa.
Right. That's some inside baseball for you right there. Good seeing you, Christopher.
You too, Christopher.
All right. Love you, buddy.
Love you.
There he goes. Cody Diener, everyone. One of the very few people in the professional wrestling business that nobody has a bad thing to say about. Great guy. If you want to check out his charity work, if you're looking for professional speakers, go to codydiener.com. There's videos up there that give you previews of what he does, and he's great at it.
That one went long, guys.
Yeah. We are up against the clock. Final thoughts as we say goodnight?
Good night, guys.
Those are fantastic thoughts.
Tid, final thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, I would like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank God Almighty first and foremost, because without him, there is no other. I'd like to thank the timekeepers in California. I'd like to thank the people out in New York for keeping the cameras working. I'd like to thank my mom, of course. I'd like to thank my my father, even though he was never really there at any given time. I'd like to thank Dan for hanging out this long in this thank you list for goodbyes. I'd like to thank... I'm just playing.
Here's some more Leo heavy metal. Good night, everyone. We'll see you next time. People, you don't know. Me and Timbaland been hustling 20 years ago. What the dealio?